Hi, my name's Bart. This is Bart Cop Radio, show number 15B, probably. 15A was recorded Saturday, and 15B is being recorded Monday, so I think I better do a ceremonial shot, just to be sure. Oh, it tastes so good. So, welcome to 15B. We're going to try to make 15B exciting. We have some music for you in 15B. Hey, how about that? We're also going to beat up some Pig Boy. Got a little bit of George Carlin. Got a little bit of this, got a little bit of that. So sit back, hook them up, try to enjoy it, and we'll see what happens. You know, Rush says so many damn stupid things every day. It's hard to pick out the stupidest thing he says in a particular day, but I have a contender for you here. Check this out.
Yeah, my friends, I got to run here. I got to work on my new book, Messages and Life Lessons from the Men's Room at 21. Yeah, sadly out of time here, and it's crunch time this week, folks. I got to run and do a bunch of stuff, but back tomorrow.
So you just heard it. That was Rush the Vulgar Pig Boy saying his next book will be Things He Learned in the Restroom. I'll bet it's a bestseller. Those diddle monkeys will buy that shit up faster than anything. They'll go and buy 5 copies apiece. Give one to mom, give one to dad, give one to the kids, give one to the uncles, give one to the aunts. The Vulgar Pig Boy learns stuff in the men's room. I wonder what it'll be about.
Here's a little thing on the Bush economy and how bad he's messed it up. Headline, few options left to juice the economy. White House must hope jobs appear soon. Sales are rising, profits are growing, investment is picking up. Yeah, all that's true. And the stock market has rallied. Oh, please, who wrote this? Did Karl Rove write this on his own damn self? After 3 years of financial implosions, terrorist attacks, and wars, the U.S. economy is coming out of the hibernation and could soon expand at a pace not seen since the beginning of the 90s. There you go again. See how they always hide it? They can't say since the beginning of the Clinton era. No, they got to couch it behind some 10-year rule. So here's the problem Bush has got. They're listing 4 things here. Number 1, fiscal policy is maxed out. $2 trillion in tax cuts and hundreds of billions more spent on education, homeland security, yakety yakety. And what do we got to show for it? All we've got is a dead ship and a wrecked crew. Well, that's the other way around, but you know what I mean. Number 2, the Fed is low on ammunition. Interest rates are at 1%. What are they going to cut? They give this monkey everything and he still screws it up. Number 3, leaning on foreigners can backfire. You know, this is a worldwide recession. When America goes in recession, the whole world goes into a recession, because if we've got no money, we can't buy cars from Germany and Japan, and if we're broke, we're laying off people, we're not selling anything, so the other countries aren't buying anything from us. We got a weak dollar, they got a weak dollar. I don't understand how all that works, but I know that how America goes is how the world goes. So when this idiot monkey drags us into this recession, he drags the whole world into a recession with him. And that's okay, because those buying opportunities overseas also work for the super rich. When we had a real president who was smart and looked out for the people, America had the best economy ever, and it brought everyone else along with us, probably with the exception of Japan. Japan's had a tough time, but they had their boom in the 80s, and they're paying for it now. But when Bush ruins the American economy, he ruins the global economy. And now we got people all over the world that are starving. We've got people all over the world that are suffering just because that monkey had to have that oil, had to have those tax cuts. The Democrats just sat back and gave it to him. Is anyone as disgusted as I am? And the last one here, it says time and clout are running short for Bush. Well, yeah, that's true. He's got about a year, 15 months to, no, closer to a year to turn this whole thing around. Can he do it? Nobody thinks he can. He's got interest rates at 1%. He's got an empty treasury. He's got an economy that's not growing any jobs. He's got an endless war that's only hurting him. The whole world hates us. Everything's gone wrong. We let a monkey in the White House. We're paying for it now. How will we get out of it? I suggest a Clark Dean ticket would probably do the trick.
I think there's a very strong possibility that George W. Bush may go down in history as the worst president we've ever had. Like, the worst. I mean, like, really bad, dangerously bad. Like, and I don't mean like in a Millard Fillmore, James Polk kind of way. I mean like, it's fucking nuts, man.
I got this next piece from Entertainment Tonight. It comes on after Letterman, the tape player goes. Sometimes I watch the first couple minutes, see if there's anything good on it. Well, they had a clip from the Oprah show. Oprah had on Nikki and Paris Hilton. I don't know if you know who Nikki and Paris Hilton are, but they are the heirs to the Hilton hotel fortune, and they are impossibly thin and fantastic looking and impossibly double super rich. That means they have a lot in common with Bush, except for the good-looking department. And I don't know if it's part of this Arkansas TV reality show that Paris Hilton is on, but she said she got a job at McDonald's for a couple of weeks. And she just couldn't believe how hard somebody had to work to make so little money. So check this out.
The Hilton sisters get a job on tonight's Star Sighting.
Always wanted to work at McDonald's. Now this sounds weird.
Paris and Nikki tell Oprah on Monday about Paris's experience working at the Golden Arches.
I made $40 a day for 8 hours of work. You have to work hard just to buy, like, a dinner.
Yeah.
Like, to go to, like, the Ivy in L.A., that's, like, working 5 days.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know?
I would say you get half a plate for 40. You get the little crap, the one crap.
Uh-huh.
So the Hilton sisters have grown up so filthy rich that they don't have a clue in this world what it's like to work for a living, just like our unelected pinhead president. Bush has no idea what it's like to work hard. He's never worked a day in his life. He can only relate to other CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and he can maybe relate to their problems with, you know, the Jaguar being in the shop or the yacht having a leak. You know how hard it is to find someone who can manage the house staff. That's how Bush thinks. He doesn't have any idea at all what it's like to work 40, 50 hours a week, come home after a hard week's work and play with the kids and keep your house going and all. He doesn't have a clue. I think that's one reason why this country's in so much trouble. However, Bill Clinton did. You remember in the 92 election, Clinton, they asked him about what's the price of eggs and a pound of hamburger and milk, that kind of thing, and he knew the answers because he's a real person. Meanwhile, Bush the smarter went to a supermarket, and when they showed him the infrared scanners, he said, well, golly gee, look at that. Because he'd never been to a grocery store. He doesn't know what it's like to do anything besides roll in that Hitler money his daddy left him. Another story in today's USA Today, greatest newspaper in the world. Cough, cough. Front page, it says, Army Reserve fears troop exodus. Soldiers are stressed on year-long deployments. And they go on to tell the story about if these poor guys are going to have to stay over there a year, 2 years, 3 years, who knows how long, people are going to be so much more reluctant to sign up. And everybody understands that. It makes sense. But I'll tell you what hasn't been mentioned yet. These guys that have been over there for a year, 130 degrees, shot at, saw their best friend's head blown off, missing their families, missing their wife's embrace, missing the kids running around, screaming and helping in birthday parties and this and that, going to the park, going to roller skating, going to football, doing all the things a family does. Instead of all that, this poor bastard's, whatever, 25 years old, he's over in Baghdad getting shot at. And he's had that for a year. And after that long year, they offered him a chance to go home for 2 weeks. And now he's home for 2 weeks. Loves his wife, got your kids. Maybe have a beer, maybe smoke them if you got them, watch a ball game on TV, feel the cool wind, Wyoming wind in your hair. Feels real good for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, you got to get back on that plane, go back to Iraq, back to more of the same. Now, it makes me wonder what the desertion rate is going to be. And to half a degree, who can blame them? I mean, you know, sure, if Afghanistan and Iraq had landed in Florida, Georgia, and the Carolinas, and were pushing westward, yeah, there'd be no time for a break. We'd have every able man, woman, and child down in the Carolinas fighting the dreaded Hun. But no, we don't have that. This is just an oil takeover to make Bush richer. How many of these brave men are going to want to leave their families and the safety of their homes to go back to Iraq for what, another year? Another 2 years? That's got to be tough. I don't know how they do it. Will the wife ever see her husband again? Will the children have to grow up without a daddy because Bush wanted that oil and lied to get us there? I don't know.
If you were on the jury, I mean, sure, if a guy deserts during wartime, he must go to prison or be shot or hung, whatever, I don't know the law. But technically that is the law, but can you blame a guy for deserting when he knows this is an unjust war for a moron that saw something he wanted? Daddy, daddy, I want that. Oh, okay, son, I'll go get it for you. That's how he grew up. Son of a bitch is 53 years old or something now, 55. He's never heard the word no. Well, I guess now he's hearing it for the first time, but if he were sitting on the jury and they had a guy on trial for desertion and he got on the witness stand and said, I love my wife, I love my kids, I had a small business in Gillette, Wyoming, and things were really nice, and I fell for the Army's trick. They offered us to steal, two weeks a year and 1 weekend a month? Yeah, that helped pay for my education. But now I owe them this money. Now we got a nutto president who fabricated a bunch of false reasons to go to war, and now we're stuck over there. I don't want to be stuck in Iraq. I want to be stuck in Gillette, Wyoming with my beautiful wife and my 2.3 kids and the damn dog and my Corvette. Sure, that's the life I'd like to live. That's the life I had under Clinton. And then this monkey stole his way into power, saw something he wanted, went and stole it too. And he's asking me to back him up. It's like being in a bar. I've mentioned this before. You ever been in a bar with a guy? I swear to God, this happened to me a bunch of times. And I'm not a fighter, at least other than verbally. But I'm in a bar and someone says, hey, this son of a bitch next to me, give me some shit. You got my back? And I'm going, no, I ain't got your damn back. What, if you start throwing chairs, you want me to jump in the middle of that? That guy pulls a knife, you want me to do what? Go to my car, get my gun, shoot him? I just soon watch the band and finish my drink. That's exactly what this is. Bush looks at America and says, you got my back? And he doesn't charge into war. He asks you to charge into war for him. He's going to sit in the car in the parking lot and ask you to join the fray inside the bar. This is all fucking backwards. This is stupid. Someone needs to do something. Are we ever going to get out of this mess? But in closing, if you're on the jury and they charge this guy with desertion because he just wanted what he had before Smirk lusted after someone else's oil, how would you vote?
So how about an easy-to-disprove, big-ass Nazi lie from the vulgar drug addict?
As many of you people know, and there are 12 million of you listening at any one time during the course of this program, 20 million during the week, as you know.
Okay, well, I may be Catholic, but I can do some math. How does Rush have 20 million listeners a week and 12 a day? If he's got 12 a day, that's 60 million a week, not counting Saturday and Sunday. So why would he be such a clumsy, stupid liar? Why tell a lie that is so obviously and easily disproved? Rush has 4 million listeners, and that was before he confessed to being a drug addict. But yeah, he has 20 million a week, and you divide that by 5, and that comes out to 4 million a day. And as we've done many times, if you divide 4 million into the 280 million people that live in this country that could listen to him, he has an approval rating of 1.5%. I think it's like 1.4, but being the generous guy that I am, I give him the other tenth. So why would he lie? 12 million a day, he says. Ain't happening. He's just a liar, and the diddle sheep can't figure that out. How in the hell do you get 12 a day and adds up to 20 a week? Do the diddle monkeys think there's, what, 1.7 days in a week? Is that how stupid they've become under Rush? Somebody needs to slap him. I hope he gets out soon, and I hope I can do it.
The real trouble started when Roy slipped to the ground, when he fell. The tiger picked the fallen magician up like a cub and carried him off stage, severing an artery in the process. Now, how many folks, you know, and by this, this is not a big deal, but it is, in a way. It has to do with acknowledging certain universal truths. You know, big cats pick up their cubs all the time to carry them away from safety, but they don't sever arteries when they do it. And they don't cause their little cubs to have to go to the hospital for stitches and surgery and this sort of thing. No, they know how to do this. That's just instinct.
A while back, we got some mail. Guy said he was a fan, but then he took me up on this. And I don't know what was in the cat's mind. Nobody on the planet knows. Roy has a clue. You know, I saw a thing on Entertainment Tonight. You ever seen, I've never seen it in my whole life, Roy rode a tiger. Now, in his show, he kind of kiddingly straddles the tiger, whatever, but I saw him in his backyard, whatever. He was bareback on this, oh, I just thought of Andrew Sullivan, on this giant Manticore tiger, and he was just riding it like a cowboy rides a horse. He, I guess, was holding on up by the cat's ears, and he was sitting pretty close to the cat's, you know, tail. But he was just like a motorcycle. He was just riding his damn cat around the backyard, and the cat was moving, too. It wasn't like the cat was galump, galump. No, the cat was running, probably, I'm sure not top speed, but the cat was, he had no trouble at all carrying Roy around the backyard like, you know, they're playing horsey. But, and then Russ tries to explain a cat's a cat. Well, I know a cat's a cat, but no one else that I know of on the planet lives with these 600-pound tigers. I mean, I guess, I don't know if him and Roy or him and Siegfried sit around watching the TV and the tigers walk by and he says, hey, Manticore, get out of the way. I'm trying to see the TV screen. Siegfried says the cat picked him up. I'm not going to argue with it because the cat's cubs don't weigh, I don't know what Roy weighs, probably $1.50, $1.70, somewhere in there. Think about picking up a, what's a cub, a tiger cub weigh? Let's say it weighs 10 pounds, 15, 20 pounds. Okay. Now, think about trying to pick up a 10 or 15, 20-pound water balloon. I think you could do it. Now, try to pick up a 160-pound water balloon. I think you're going to get wet, and it's the same principle. The shell that holds the man together is fighting gravity. The little tiger cub, you know, is going to weigh 5, 10 pounds, 15 pounds, whatever, and the tiger can pick it up pretty easily. You don't see these tigers picking each other up, do you, Rush? You Nazi. The tiger didn't understand that Roy has a different body mass proportion than a cub. And if that's what happened, that's what happened. And it just kills me to see people explaining to Siegfried and Roy what their cats really did. Because like I say, this isn't like we got a cat in the back. Apparently, they live with the tigers. Mrs. Bart knows our cats real well. We've had the cats, I guess, 13 years now. And she knows when one of them's mad. She knows when what they're going to do next. She knows what they're thinking. I mean, she'll say, watch, he's going to do this to her. And a couple months later, he'll do that, and then she'll turn around and be jealous of him and take something from him, and that she just watches and observes all this. I think Roy probably knows those cats better than Mrs. Bart knows her cats.
Suddenly it's over. War is finally done. Soldiers in the desert sand still clinging to a gun. No one is the winner, and everyone must lose. Suddenly the war is over, that's the news. Suddenly celebrity, something back to style. Back to running tabloid for a while. Pain's almost everywhere, the whole world's got the flu. Suddenly the war is over, that's the news. That's the news.
That was Merle Haggard, one of the last big giants of country music. I'm not much on the country music, but I like that song a little bit. But mostly, when the Dixie Chicks got chicked, they said Merle was one of the only people that stood up for him, which is a fucking crime. I mean, even if you're Bush's biggest fan in the world, what they could have said so easily is, I disagree with Natalie, I wish she hadn't have said that, but they do have a right to say it, this is America. But nobody said that. Nobody on the right, I mean. But of all the people in country music, they singled out Merle Haggard as the guy that stood by him. Shout out Chinako for Merle for having the balls to stand up and do the right thing instead of whimpering in fear like the whole rest of the damn country. The Vulgar Pig Boys show in Tulsa is on a 2-hour delay. So a couple of Fridays back, I was riding around in my car, had called in a burger order, and I heard him say that in an hour and 45 minutes, the Vulgar Pig Boy was going to confess his addiction to hillbilly heroin. So I ate my burger extra fast, and I zoomed home, got a tape in, and got the entire 3-hour last show Rush did. He told lots of lies in those 3 hours, but I can't call him on every lie because then this would be a 37-hour show because it takes a while. Rush can lie faster than anybody. He can lie faster than the auctioneer. You know that guy? Rush can tell 15 lies in a minute. That's like 4 seconds per lie, but he can do it. I've seen him do it. I can't get them all, so I grabbed a few. This is about school vouchers and what a bunch of evil hypocrites Bill and Al were for putting their kids in private schools. So let's hear what the Vulgar Pig Boy says about Chelsea and Al Gore's kids going to school, and then we'll come back.
Then the fact that liberal Democrats oppose vouchers. You know, they're perfectly free because of their affluency to send their own kids to private schools and don't have to go to these public schools that nobody else wants to send their kids to. But when it comes to a policy that would allow people to direct their own money into vouchers, that would allow them to get their kids into private schools. Oh, no, no, can't do that. We've got to maintain the integrity of the public school system and maintain the integrity of the teachers' unions. But Ted Kennedy and Hillary and Bill Clinton and Al Gore, they're not going to maintain the integrity of the public school system with their kids. They'll make sure you do, but they won't. And that's classic illustration, one of the problems.
No, this is a classic example of Rush being the vulgar Nazi pig boy that we all know he is. Anyone that watched The West Wing knows what happens when the president's daughter gets kidnapped. Now, why is it going to help the school system if Chelsea gets kidnapped or murdered? The Secret Service told the Clintons early on that they could guard her much, much better in a private school rather than a public school. The rights are different at a private school. When you're on private school property, they own you. When you're on public school property, you may have to go get a warrant to do something. Well, they don't have time to do that in the Secret Service, so they told Bill, put her in a private school. We can guard her better there. And so the Clintons said, yes, you guys are the experts. Whatever you say is what we're going to do. And that's what they did. The vulgar pig boy knows that. He's just trying to beat up a little 12-year-old girl again. Remember, she was 12 when she got to Washington. Rush has always been the king of beating up the little girls. The bully can't do anything unless he's beating up a little girl or an old person, some old, you know, disabled veteran or old black retired woman, someone like that. No, that's his favorite targets, that vulgar bastard.
Commandments, you know? Yeah, let me tell you. Listen, here's my problem. Why are there 10? You don't need 10. I think the list of commandments was deliberately and artificially inflated to get it up to 10. It's a padded list. Here's what they did. About 5,000 years ago, a bunch of religious and political hustlers got together to try to figure out how to control people, how to keep them in line. They knew people were basically stupid and would believe anything they were told, so they announced that God had given them some commandments. Up on a mountain, when no one was around, God had given them the Ten Commandments. But let me ask you this. When they were sitting around making this shit up, why did they pick 10? Why 10? Why not 9 or 11? I'll tell you why. Because 10 sounds official. 10 sounds important. They knew if it was 11, people wouldn't take it seriously. So what, are you kidding me? The 11 commandments? Get the fuck out of here. But 10. 10 sounds important. 10 is the basis for the decimal system. It's a decade. It's a psychologically satisfying number. The top 10, the 10 most wanted, the 10 best dressed. So having 10 commandments was really a marketing decision. And to me, it's clearly a bullshit list. It's a political document artificially inflated to sell better. I'm going to show you how you could reduce the number of commandments and come up with a list that's a little more workable and logical. We're going to start with the first three, and I'll use the Roman Catholic version because those are the ones I was taught as a little boy. I am the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not have strange gods before me. Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Thou shalt keep holy the Sabbath. Right off the bat, the first three, pure bullshit. Sabbath day, Lord's name, strange gods. Spooky language. Designed to scare and control primitive people. In no way does superstitious nonsense like this apply to the lives of intelligent, civilized humans in the 21st century. You throw out the first three commandments, whoosh, you're down to seven. Next, honor thy father and mother. Obedience, respect for authority. Just another name for controlling people. The truth is, obedience and respect should not be automatic. They should be earned. They should be based on the parents' performance. Parents' performance. Right? Some parents deserve respect. Most of them don't. Period. You're down to six. Now, in the interest of logic, something religion is very uncomfortable with, we're going to jump around the list a little bit. Thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not bear false witness. Stealing and lying. Well, actually, these two both prohibit the same kind of behavior. Dishonesty, stealing, and lying. So you don't need two of them. Instead, you combine them and you call it, thou shalt not be dishonest. And suddenly, you're down to five. And as long as we're combining, I have two others that belong together. Thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Once again, these two prohibit the same kind of behavior, in this case, marital infidelity. The difference is coveting takes place in the mind, and I don't think you should outlaw fantasizing about someone else's wife. Otherwise, what's a guy going to think about when he's waxing his carrot? But marital fidelity is a good idea, so we're going to keep the idea and call this one, thou shalt not be unfaithful. And suddenly, we're down to four. But when you think about it, honesty and fidelity are really part of the same overall value. So in truth, you could combine the two honesty commandments with the two fidelity commandments and give them simpler language, positive language instead of negative, and call the whole thing, thou shalt always be honest and faithful, and we're down to three. Thou shalt, they're going away fast. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. This one is just plain fucking stupid. Coveting your neighbor's goods is what keeps the economy going. All right? Your neighbor gets a vibrator that plays O Come All Ye Faithful. You want to get one too. Coveting creates jobs. Leave it alone. You throw out coveting, you're down to two now. The big honesty and fidelity commandment, and the one we haven't talked about yet, thou shalt not kill. Murder. The fifth commandment. But when you think about it, religion has never really had a big problem with murder. Not really. More people have been killed in the name of God than for any other reason. All you have to do is... All you have to do is look at Northern Ireland, the Middle East, Kashmir, the Inquisition, the Crusades, and the World Trade Center to see how seriously the religious folks take thou shalt not kill. The more devout they are, the more they see murder as being negotiable. It's negotiable. You know? It depends. It depends on who's doing the killing and who's getting killed. So, with all of this in mind, I leave you with my revised list of the two commandments. Thou shalt always be honest and faithful to the provider of thy nookie. And thou shalt try real hard not to kill anyone. Unless, of course, they pray to a different invisible man from the one you pray to. Two is all you need. Moses could have carried him down the hill in his fucking pocket. And if they had a list like that, I wouldn't mind those folks in Alabama putting it up on the courthouse wall. As long as they included one additional commandment, thou shalt keep thy religion to thyself.
A little while back, I put up a survey on the members section that said, tell me about the radio. I'm not asking for praise. Tell me what's good. Tell me what's bad. Tell me what's working. Tell me what's not. A lot of people like the give and take with Resch. Shutting up the Nazi pig boy, always going to be popular, thing on the old Bar Cop radio. When I asked about the phone calls, most people agreed if the phone calls are good, if they say something, fine. But, you know, just the guy calling in saying, hi, how you doing? And how about that Bush? Isn't he a Nazi? Those aren't as entertaining. So as a result, we got one phone call since our last show that I want to play for you. This is a stalker, and he uses all kinds of bad language. So you more sensitive types might want to shield your ears to go past this part. He uses the F word.
October 2nd, 3:07 p.m.
Fuck you, Bart. You're a fucking slime motherfucking little punk. Pussy motherfucker.
Now, first of all, what a coward. If I had Rush's phone number or somebody's phone number, I wouldn't call and say, fuck you, fuck you. I'd call him and say, hey, you're lying about this, and I'll tell you why. A, B, C, and D. Now, that proves you're lying. If you're man enough, you'd admit it, but you can't, unless you can answer A, B, C, and D, I gotcha, and you got to admit it, so get out of here. That's what I would say to somebody if I had a chance to semi-challenge them on a Bart phone type of situation. But the poor guy, that's all he's got is fuck you, fuck you. The other thing, little surprise I've been saving, we have the caller ID on the phone calls. And as you can tell, that call came in date and time stamped. So when my bill gets here, I'm going to look up and see who called on that date and time. And maybe between us, we can force this asshole to get a new phone number. Now, it probably costs little or no money to get a new phone number, but telling 100 people, no, I had to get a new number. I kind of fucked up. I taunted Bart, and then it turns out he knew my phone number, and then 3,000 people called me, and I had to change it. That would be kind of funny if everybody hearing this call was like, hey, fuck you, motherfucker. Fuck you, you coward bastard, you know. Anyway, so we're all looking forward to the next Bart phone bill that comes in. Maybe we'll pay him some kind of special surprise. The other thing, I doubt that he's a subscriber, so he's not ever going to know that this is coming. That'll be kind of cool. So at some point, if that number comes in on whatever date that was, I mean, it's recorded. That's why I left the date in. We'll just go back and check the date, and I'll check the phone call. And if we get this guy's number, we could create havoc. Okay, now let's get into the financial section. USA Today, finest newspaper in the world. Cough, cough. Page 3B, 43.6 million people don't have health insurance. The number of U.S. residents without health insurance rose at the fastest clip in a decade. Notice what they mean when you go back 10 years. That means to when his father was in office. Hitting 43.6 million, a development expected to increase pressure on lawmakers to take strong action to ease the problem. Oh, I'm sure Bush is quaking. I'm sure this Republican oil White House is just quaking at the idea of people losing their health insurance. You know, when you have $300 million in the bank, insurance is the last thing on your mind. Because with $300 million, you can buy the hospital and the staff of doctors. And so you don't need health insurance because you own a hospital and a bunch of doctors. They're not worried about that. It says here about 15% of the population was without insurance in 2002. The number of uninsured grew by 2.4 million, the largest increase since 91-92. And who was president in 91-92? Oh, and while I'm at it, I'll get back, but every time you hear in the 90s, remember, Clinton, because that's what these bastards are going to tell you every time. Oh, we had excellent growth in the 90s. We had economic prowess in the 90s. But no, they're not going to say Clinton gave that to us. They're going to say the 90s, because that's the old Reagan-Bush hangover, you know, lying bastards. Many of those people lost their jobs and their insurance because of the struggling economy. For some, insurance was lost from double-digit premiums increased because employers stopped offering coverage. Oh, hell, that didn't make any sense. For some, insurance was lost when double-digit premium increases caused employers to stop offering coverage. Some of the insured opted not to enroll in coverage offered by employers, and the amount taken from their paychecks to cover the cost rose.
Well, it's only going to get worse, and this is what Bill and Hillary tried to solve, but the Republicans said, no, you will not solve our health problems. You will not solve all the medical costs in this country because we are making too much money from the insurance companies and the HMOs and those slimy bastards over at the pharmaceutical companies. Bill and Hillary tried to stop this, and Republicans said, oh, no, it's too big. It's one-seventh of our economy. It's 40% of our economy. It's too big to fix. We can't fix it. It costs too much to fix. We can't do that. And, of course, the Democrats caved in and said, we're sorry. You spineless weenies. How can I be in a party of spineless weenies? Moving on, as you know, we like to move on. Same page. Here's a guy named Michael Doyle. Michael Doyle, they call him now the $521 million man. And as is my wont, W-O-N-T, I don't read these articles. I can just tell by the headlines. What this guy did, he invented a browsing searcher thing that Microsoft absorbed, in quotes, from him and put it into Internet Explorer. And now their Internet Explorer works a whole lot better. And the guy said, hey, Bill, why don't you throw me a bone here since I made you $100 billion? And Gates told him to go to hell. So this guy sued, and all these years later, let's see, he started in 1993, he did this. So here it is, 10 years later, the jury or the judge, whoever, I don't care, ruled that he should get $531 million for coming up with this innovative thing on the browser. Well, of course, the greedy bastards at Microsoft have to fight him tooth and nail because Bill Gates, only, I forget how much, what's he got, $50 billion? And this guy wanted half of $1 billion because he invented the browser. Windows made more than the IE, but you know what I'm talking about. But why the hell can't Microsoft just break off five? This was in 93. They could have said, hey, dude, we're going to give you $100 million and admit nothing, and you get out of here. We don't ever want to see your name or your picture in the paper again. Deal, deal. There it is. It's done. It's like that Anna Nicole Smith thing. Remember? She was blowing some guy who was 95 and worth all these billions.
The president said yesterday he wants a full investigation.
He sort of left her $500 million and the son fought it and it turned a big
thing. Hey, bring it on.
You got all the billions in the world. Give the lady $500 million. Just say, lady, here's $500 million. Go away. We don't like you. Don't want to see you again. Just disappear. Now, see, everybody's happy. The lawyers don't make no money. It's all over with. There's nothing in the newspaper. It's clean. It's neat. But, no, you can't do nothing clean and neat in this world anymore. Everything's got to be dragged out 100,000 times. Oh, it's just crazy. All right, what else we got?
Wrong again, oh vulgar pig one. Bush said bring it on, the full investigation, as long as his employees will handle the investigation. Now, do you think John Ashcroft is going to impeach George Bush? No. Ashcroft is in this BFEE. You know, I wish I had some details. Damn, I wish I had a detail guy, but someone said the other day, Karl Rove managed to get Ashcroft $50,000 out of somebody, Enron, I think. But Karl Rove was the conduit between Enron and Ashcroft. I remember when the big Enron thing hit, they asked Ashcroft if he's going to give the $50,000 back. He said, no, I'm going to keep it. And the press said, oh, okay. Unlike any Democrat, the only way Bush can survive an investigation is if somebody like Ashcroft or Lee Hamilton or somebody who is already on the payroll handles the investigation. There is no full and free investigation offered Rush. You're lying again. Have you ever told the truth? Okay, here's another clip from Rush's last show. Now, everybody remembers what happened on Rush's last show, right? Oh, by the way, what a coward he was to bring that up. You know, with 3 minutes to go in the show, he brings it up. He could have brought it up in the first hour and had 2 hours worth of people calling in explaining, you know, Rush, what the hell's the deal? And then he would have had to dance around it. So the coward waits until 2 hours and 57 minutes to bring it up. I'm addicted to heroin. I got to go back. What a coward. Anyway, this is something he said on his last show. You're not going to believe this.
Too many of us in our society want to think that everything can be rosy and hunky-dory, and it's some of the bad things and some of the horrible things, they're really not, and they are. And so it would serve you well to remember this story when some of these circumstances come up. I mean, like rehabilitation of criminals. You know, it's often been said that we can rehab these people and find out what it is that makes them do what they do. But a criminal's a criminal. You know, they're bad people. And the odds are, you run into a bad person, person's going to be bad.
Can you believe he's that stupid? I know what you're thinking. This is some splice from another day, another time. But no, this was on his last show. Rush Limbaugh very clearly explaining that that criminals are evil people. When you break the law, you are evil, and you cannot be rehabilitated. You just heard the son of a bitch say that with his own mouth. Evil criminals cannot be rehabilitated. Yet this monkey's off on a 5-week rehabilitation to help him kick his drug habit, which is a crime. The idiot. How stupid. He knew weeks ago or days ago or whatever, he knew definitely before he said this that he was going to this rehab. And let's be honest about something else. The only reason, two reasons he's going to rehab. A, he got narked on. The National Enquirer told he was going to just stay on drugs till the end of time. The National Enquirer might have saved his life by exposing his illegal heroin habit. And number two, now that that's all over the front page that Rush is a major buyer of illegal heroin, that means the DA might, you know, it's Florida, Jeb Bush is in charge, so they'll probably give him a wink like they did Noel. But the idea that this way he can go to the judge and say, look, Your Honor, he's already been through the rehab, he's clean now, he had a little, you know, one of them 60-pound cysts on his ass that he was trying to get rid of, and, you know, Your Honor, you know, Hunter, how it is when a rich white man has a drug problem, Your Honor, it's all different. But when them niggers have one, Your Honor, this is a rich white guy. See him right there with the big white on his face? The white guy. So, yeah, well, white guy, he don't need to go to jail, Your Honor. It's those Negroes, them darkies that need to go to jail. So that's two reasons why Rush finally admitted, he finally, on that last show, he says, you know, I've always been honest with you people. Yeah, Rush, always, from the day one, you've always been honest. The only reason you got honest with these people is because you got caught, just like Dr. Laura got caught with her leg spread, just like Bill Bennett got caught with his gambling addiction. $8 million, Bill Bennett. Your kids are going to grow up without that $8 million because you can't control yourself. Still smoking, Bill Bennett? What a nut. So here we got the Nazi pig boy explaining in his own clear language, people who break the law cannot be rehabilitated. The evil criminals are going to be evil criminals forever. That's what Rush says. Rush is always right 98.4% of the time.
It's often been said that we can rehab these people, but a criminal's a criminal. You know, they're bad people.
Okay, this next bit is my attempt at humor. It's probably not going to work, but it's the last thing on this segment. So if you hate the music, now's the time to bail. But you might find this interesting because you have not heard this before. Back in 1966, I spent a couple of months in London just before Christmas time, staying in a little flat a friend of mine had. And the neighbor John comes over and says, Bart, I got a song I want you to hear. I've been working it on my guitar and wanted to see what you thought about it. And I'm going, geez, John, it's kind of late. I don't know. He says, no, it's real short. I'll just play a little bit of it. So, all right. Here's what he played. Work. The song doesn't seem to have a foundation, a skeleton for you to work around. It seems to me like you need some kind of backbone here to work on, and you know, those lyrics need some work too. Why don't you work on that some more and check back with me in a couple of days? So he took my advice and went home and he worked on it. A couple of days later, it's John again. Got a new version of the song, so it'll just take a minute for him to play. Cut him off again. Yes, John, it is too bad. Needs work, dude. Needs all kinds of work. Why don't you go back with your friends? Have your friends work on it. Have them help you. I know that one guy plays guitar. Why don't you bring him in? I can see you might have a song here someday, but John needs lots of work. So John sulked off again, didn't like that, said he'd be back in a couple of days, that they were going to work on it, try to make it better. Sure enough, a couple of days later, sure enough, it's John, and this time he brought one of his friends with him. After I heard the third version, I said, John, you might have a bit of a song here, but it's just not, it's not going anywhere. You're going to need something else. What about that the lead guitar player guy? Why don't you bring him in, let him do something? Maybe he can spice up a little bit. John says, okay. So he surly's off there. Says he'll call me in a few days. Sure enough, a couple days go by. It's John. But this time he says, instead of us coming over here, why don't you come down to the studio? Maybe it'll sound a little better. I said, okay. So we jumped in the car, and this one guy, George, he's got this big fatty, keeps smoking. I admit I had a couple of hits, but, you know, I wanted to hear the song, so I didn't get too nutty. We finally get to the studio, and they plug in. Give it another shot. This is take number four.
No one I think is in my tree. I mean, it must be high or low. That is, you can't, you know, tune in, but it's all right. That is, I think it's not too bad. Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real. Nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Field forever.
Well, I must admit I like that one the best, but I don't know, that weird guitar, chang, 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 I'm not sure that goes in there. And also, you know, it kind of starts out folksy, and then it goes into the psychedelic thing. Have you thought about maybe just having one theme throughout instead of a little folksy, a little psychedelic guitar? Have you ever tried, like, backwards effects? You might try something there. I mean, kind of a shoop, shoop kind of thing. That might kick it off a little bit. They said they'd work on it, so I told them I'd come back in a few days, see how it was sounding. And I'll be darned if it didn't sound a whole bunch different the next time I went by.
Nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Field forever.